And now, book at bedtime. Carol has discovered that the body she found on Feathering Beach was that of Sam Kent, the father of the troubled schoolboy Nick Kent. Meanwhile, along the coast in Brighton, Jude's suspicions about Rory Turnbull's supposed suicide have been dramatically confirmed. Turnbull is very much alive, but this could be a dangerous discovery to have made. Joanna Tope reads the final episode of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett.
"Well," said Jude, "thank you for interrupting my phone call." Rory Turnbull put the turned-off mobile on a table. Then he moved to stand almost protectively behind Tanya's chair. "So, you two are an item." "Yeah," said the girl. "And what's wrong with that?" "Nothing," said Jude. "There's nothing wrong with love." "Then why are you here?" asked Rory. "What's your name?" "Jude. How much have you pieced together?" "Well," said Jude, "if on the one hand you have a middle-aged man who, with maximum publicity, has declared he is about to commit suicide, and on the other, the body of a second middle-aged man of similar build, I might suspect some substitution of bodies was being contemplated. Body wearing Rory Turnbull's clothes, found in Rory Turnbull's burnt-out car. Body must belong to Rory Turnbull. God knows he had enough reasons. Like the ruinous heroin habit that meant he had to remortgage his house and put his hand in the till at the yacht club. Open and shut case." Rory Turnbull nodded slowly. "You have done well, haven't you?"
"And what about the dead man?" said Jude. "The one who would so obligingly pretend to be Rory."
"He was a waster," said Tanya. "Always hanging round on the beach, out of his head on heroin. Monday before last, he took an overdose. And Rory just happened to be the one who found the body." "Tanya," said Rory firmly, "I think we could do with something to drink. Here, nip down to the off-license and get a litre of grouse." He planted a little kiss on her forehead. "Take care." Jude watched Tanya leave the bedsit.
"She's pregnant, isn't she?"
"What about it?"
"Nothing," said Jude. "Except I assume that's the reason you set this whole thing up."
"The final reason, yes. The other reasons have been building for years." There was a gleam in Rory Turnbull's eyes. "Me and Tanya is a love match."
"I'm sure it is," said Jude. "But does that justify murder?"
He gave her a pained look, but then made the confession lightly.
"All right.
Yes, I first saw him in the summer, hanging round down by the pier. He asked me for money, and I gave him some. I saw him a few times after that. But it was only when I knew Tanya was pregnant that the plan began to form in my mind."
"So how did you kill him?" said Jude. "Where did you kill him?"
"Here. I'd sent Tanya out to the cinema. I'd given him money for heroin, and he'd had a hit. I smothered him with that pillow."
"So why didn't you fake the suicide the same night?"
"I intended to. I laid him on the back seat of my car with a coat over him and set off. On the outskirts of Feathering, a car came towards me, flashing its lights. It was Bill Chilcott, who told me the police were on Seaview Road, stopping every car that came along. Random breath tests. That got me scared. There was no other way to the Shorelands estate."
"Why did you have to go home?"
"Because that's where the petrol and rags and stuff were," he snapped. "Anyway, I panicked."
"And hid the body inside your boat at the yacht club?"
He turned pale. "How the hell did you know that?"
"Next morning, when Tanya went to check, it was missing. Shortly after, she found it washed up on the beach. Then those boys put the body back in the boat, which meant your plan was all set again, 24 hours late.
Why didn't you do it on Tuesday night?"
"Because I just lifted the body out of the boat when I heard a noise. There was someone snooping around, a boy. Anyway, he screamed, and that rattled me." Poor Aaron Spaulding, thought Jude. He'd come back to the scene of his crime and seen the dead body apparently moving. It had been enough to unhinge him. So, she said, because other people now knew the body had been stowed inside Brigadoon 2, you had to move it. To one of those blue fisherman's boxes near the yacht club, perhaps? But next morning the area was cordoned off for repairs to the sea wall, so it really wasn't that great a plan, was it? It was a brilliant plan, he spat, and I'm still going ahead with it. Only this time, Jude, you're going to be part of the plan. When Carol got home from Maggie Kent's house, she poured herself a large scotch from the bottle she kept for guests. Now she knew the identity of the body, she could understand the reason for Nick's collapse. To have been involved in a black magic ritual with a corpse was bad enough, but to discover in the cold light of day that the body was that of your idolized father would have unhinged the most stable of adults. She remembered that she'd intended to spend the evening with Ted Crisp, looking for the body at the sea wall. But now that the dead man possessed an identity and a family context, the idea of further probing became distasteful. Carol decided she'd done enough for the evening, and now she was going to have a very long soak in a very hot bath. But just then, her telephone rang. When Tanya had returned to the bedsit, Rory had got her to help to tie Jude up, with soft scarves over her clothes, so as not to leave any marks on her body. Then they had manhandled her down to the garage and into the back seat of the BMW. She'd lain there nearly an hour now, while upstairs the two conspirators presumably went through the final details of their elopement. When Rory Turnbull finally returned, he was alone. Briskly, he opened the garage doors, drove the BMW out, and closed them again, before setting off at a steady pace west out of Brighton. "It won't work, you know," said Jude. "The body's been dead a week. The post-mortem will show that, regardless of how much the body's disfigured by fire." "Change of plan," he said. "By the time the body's found, nobody'll be able to give a precise date of death. All they'll have to identify him by will be the fact that he's in my car wearing my clothes. And, of course, they'll be able to check his dental work."
"My God," said Jude, "the missing tooth."
"I don't know how he lost it, but as soon as I noticed it, I knew what I had to do."
"You mean you actually took out one of your own?"
"Not difficult for someone of my profession. I made up a story to Barbara about being in a fight. Then I had a rather distinctive chromium cobalt denture made for me by our usual lab. And the plate also fits the dead man's mouth." He was very full of himself now.
"You said," Jude began with trepidation, "you weren't going to use fire."
"No," said Rory Turnbull. "I want the car to be discovered in a few weeks' time, after the fish have taken some of the flesh off the bodies."
"Bodies?" she echoed softly.
"I'm afraid, my dear Jude, you know too much to let you survive. Fortunately, there's been a rumour around that I might have another woman. Ted Crisp in the pub even suggested you and I might be an item. That's how it'll seem. The doomed love affair, the suicide pact, the only way they could be together. Which was, of course, why Rory Turnbull drove himself and his lover to their deaths off the sea wall at Feathering."
The night was still and cold as the BMW stopped outside the yacht club gates. Rory Turnbull opened the lock with his member's key and edged the car forward till it was alongside one of the fishermen's chests. He leapt out, leaving the door ajar. Jude watched him as he opened and removed the padlock, reached into the chest, and heaved out the body of the late Sam Kent. For a moment, he held the putrid flesh against his own body, almost as if it were a lover. Then he laid the body flat on the cement, and with both hands thrust the dead jaws apart. He reached inside his own mouth and removed his dental plate. Then he fixed it inside the dead man's mouth.
"What are you doing, Rory?"
From the ladder to which he had been clinging, Ted Crisp rose over the side of the sea wall like an avenging fury. At the same time, Carol appeared from the shadows of the yacht club. As she went to free Jude from the BMW, Rory Turnbull launched himself ferociously at the landlord, elbows working like pistons. A wild punch caught Ted Crisp on the tip of the chin and sent him flying. Then the dentist rushed to pick up his precious body. Carol and Jude watched in amazement as he jammed the corpse into the front seat, slammed the door shut, and hurried round to the other side.
"You're mad, Rory," shouted Jude. "You'll never get away with it."
"Yes, I will," he shrieked back. "I've got it all planned out."
The BMW shot off fast down the quayside road. Far too fast. Rory Turnbull misjudged the corner and bounced off a concrete bollard. The BMW spun crazily before smashing into the Second World War mine that was used as a charity collecting box. With the impact, the car burst into flames.
"The ironical thing is," said Ted Crisp, "that because Rory died in a car crash rather than an apparent suicide, Barbara will actually benefit from his insurance policies."
"And presumably inherit the money he'd sorted away," said Jude.
"Except," Carol pointed out, "all that money is in accounts he'd opened using Sam Kent's name."
"Does that mean the Kents will benefit?" said Jude eagerly.
"Afraid not. The accounts would have been set up illegally. I'm sure it'll all go back to Barbara in the end."
Ted Crisp shook his shaggy head.
"Whole thing'll take some sorting out. Have you seen Maggie again, Jude?"
"I dropped in this afternoon. Well, it's going to be tough, but she'll come through it." "And Nick?"
"Oh, he's being brilliant. He's a good, bright boy. Whatever else all this has done, it's certainly brought those two closer together."
They fell quiet. A week or so had passed since the dramatic events on the sea wall. Carol was wearing her freshly cleaned Burberry, and was delighted that the dry cleaning had not affected its waterproof qualities at all. The three of them had been alone in the bar since Bill Chilcott had finished his customary half and gone home to the little woman.
"What we all need is another drink," said Ted. "Landlord's treat again."
"Large white wine for me, please," said Jude.
Carol looked at her watch.
"No thanks, Ted. Better get back. I'm expecting a phone call."
"If you're not there, they'll call back some other time, won't they?"
Jude grinned one of her big, easy grins. Carol was torn. There was no phone call she was expecting. All that lay ahead was an evening of watching television with Gulliver.
"Come on, Carol. Like I said, landlord street. Large white wine, isn't it?"
"Oh, very well, Ted."
She sank back into her seat.
"Thank you very much."
Of course, Carol Seddon would never be a natural pub person, but it didn't do any harm to behave against character, just once in a while.
Joanna Tope was reading the final episode of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett. The book was abridged by Stuart Conn, and the producer in Edinburgh was David Jackson Young.